Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome in. It's the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Dustin Hawkinsmith and Greg Pickle are here. Greg Pickle is back after a one-week hiatus. Not the best week. He was not on vacation. It was kind of the opposite. It was a staycation with some side problems. We're
That's
here.
A good way to put it.
I'm just trying to put it diplomatically. We're here from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. We're just a few days now from another Penn State football game. It feels like it's been forever at this point. So we'll look at really the past few days, media availabilities, and what we've kind of learned about this Penn State team. There's still a lot we don't know going in the offensive coordinator search, KJ Hamler. So we'll touch on those things. We'll also look back on signing day. Jim Galante and I broke down the class a bit. Last week, I wanted to get your thoughts, Greg, on how good this class is and, you know, what it means to go 27 for 27 in the early signing period. So we'll touch on all that stuff a little bit later. We'll also talk some Penn State wrestling, some wrestling over the weekend at the U.S. Senior National Open and what that means for the Olympic trials and Kale Sanderson's program as well. So let's get into what we've learned in the past few days. And I just wanted to, I mean, there's a number of directions we can go, I guess, but Sean Clifford being available was one of the things that jumped off the page to me. James Franklin said he wasn't 100% yet, but he anticipated him to be 100%. I know you're big on the percentages, Greg. What would you say? Is he like 94.5 maybe at this point?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It was one weird day up there last Friday. I mean, you know, Sean Clifford, James Franklin at one point said he wasn't 100%, but he was getting there and he was doing everything. Then Sean Clifford made it sound like he was 100% and was doing everything. And then KJ Hamler said, well, he's not doing everything yet, but he's getting close. And then KJ Hamler told one group of reporters that he had not made his mind up yet about whether he was going to the NFL or coming back to school. He later told another that he had made that decision, but that he wasn't going to reveal it until after the Cotton Bowl. So there was a lot of information flying around up there that kind of contradicted itself in a short period of time.
Do you ever feel like Penn State's just messing with you?
No, I just think that I think some of these kids get put into tough spots because there's more reporters than there are kids to be interviewed. So, you know, you might start, for example, his flight of, you know, his group was, you know, Etor was in there. Michael Parsons was in there. So there were a lot of guys to get to. And I think after, you know, answering that question one or two or three times, you know, you start to just keep sick of that answering that question and maybe you say something that you didn't originally intend to say. So, you know, I think that Clifford should be almost as close to 100% as can be. We know for a fact that if he plays, he'll be higher than 90%, which is what Noah Cain was and never saw the field during the home stretch of the season. So
somewhere between 90 and 100.
91 and 100.
If you're looking at grade point average, you're doing pretty well here. I like to tell the story of when I was traveling with the team. Mm-hmm. It was 2009, 2010. I was amazed as I'm kind of observing. I was never really in the traditional reporter role, but I'm amazed all these media availabilities, these guys who have eligibility left, who might be going for the draft, might not be going to the draft, and the reporters doing their jobs, and I respect that, but said, hey, you know, it was Navarro Bowman. Navarro, are you going to go to the draft? Are you going to go to the draft? You have to keep pushing, but they're always going to say the same thing.
Right.
So I walked up to Navarro Bowman, and I said, are you – sick of people asking you about the draft? And he said, yeah, you'll find out after I declare. And he was like, oops. You know, so like sometimes when you zag instead of zigging, it could pay off, I guess. But I respect the spot that these guys are in. What do you make of KJ Hamler being the only one out of this group who is putting their announcement until after the bowl game? Is there any significance to that whatsoever?
James, you know, you talk about that. You know, I think a couple of guys were asked why. And, I think I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but I don't think anyone – I was a little bit surprised that Michael Bennett was coming back. But, you know, offensive linemen, I think by nature, just kind of want to get those things out of the way. They don't want to make it a big production. And I think some other positions, sometimes guys – you know, are a little bit more sought after, I guess. And, you know, for KJ Hamler, he was very direct about the fact that he felt like if he made an announcement before the game, it would make you know, it too much about KJ Hamler, not about the team, and he didn't want to do that. I mean, you could make the argument that doing it the other way is, you know, maybe even more of a, not a distraction, but something, you know, something along those lines. So, you know, to each their own, however it always works out. But he's going to announce after the game. Obviously, I think we need to know if Shaka Toney is coming back, if Tariq Castro Fields is coming back. But outside of that, yeah, it is interesting that he decided to wait, but I think it just becomes a preference thing. James Franklin seemed to hint at the fact that he knew what some of these guys were going to do and when they were going to announce. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, there's always a an information gap, especially this time of year. It's hard for me to kind of picture how James Franklin is having conversation with guys, not just for the NFL draft, but if there are guys who are considering transferring or who have made their mind up about transferring, maybe their name didn't leak out in the transfer portal yet. I wonder how many guys, how many situations like that there are. And we've seen over the years too, where guys just, they walk away from football, but they remain students at Penn State.
Right.
For a number of reasons. So maybe there's some things like that, but you know, along those lines, James Franklin did say that there are more guys back than he anticipated there would be as of right now. There's still
That's the other one that we not know about. You know, does that mean guys that they thought were going to transfer and did not? Does that mean guys that were going to go to the NFL and did not? Does that mean that some of the guys that already announced? Does it not mean some of the guys that already announced? Your guess is good.
I got to think it's all of the above. I got to think that their roster picture maybe has been a little different than they anticipated. And I don't envy coaches for having to try to work their way towards that 85 number every single year when there are a billion variables in play.
Yeah, you know, James Franklin has said at least twice now. I think he said it once or twice Wednesday and then again Friday of last week during his signing day availability and then his Cotton Bowl pre-travel availability. And he kept saying that, kept referring to changes that were going to be made related to the 85-man scholarship cap and how teams can get to that number, etc. I mean, if you read between the lines, he seems pretty darn convinced that that's going to happen sooner rather than later. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. His whole thing is that with the transfer portal, there's no way you can, get to 85 scholarships every year. Now, the argument would be Penn State, who, of course, has 92 at the current moment. So it is hard for some programs, though, to get that to that number. I understand that. But I don't know. He seems pretty dead set that some changes are coming to the way scholarships are counted and things like that. I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
He would know, I suppose, but I don't know what those changes would be. But I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the culture has changed probably more than the NCAA had anticipated with the number of guys who are walking away from, you know, situations that might be just temporary roadblocks in their path. Or, you know, anytime there's a hint of being disgruntled or unhappy for, you know, it could be football reasons, it could be other reasons, any sign of that, and guys are being pretty quick to put their name out there because they now have, you know, a better way to communicate with other teams through that process. So right. I think more has changed on the college football landscape than a lot of us anticipated. Now, what that response is, what James Franklin knows that we don't know, I can't even begin to guess what that might be. Whether, I mean, if they're going to change the, so what happens with the scholarship limit at 85?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, you would have to, I mean, my suspicion is that they won't maybe change the 85, but they'll say if you lose a guy to a transfer, I don't know. I'm not really sure what he's getting at. I've been trying to, while you were talking, I've been trying to go find that quote.
The old Greg type and talk. Yeah. The Greg type and talk is,
it's always
classic.
Been a challenge to make projections and guesstimates on where you're going to be from a scholarship number, with who is leaving early, who do you have to sign, all these types of things to get as close to the 85 as you can. With the transfer portal, it makes it even harder to project that, especially with the hard cap rules that you have. So I do think there's going to be some changes from the perspective to create a little bit more flexibility. So there's my guess what that means is that but the question I would have is, okay, so let's say they change when you have to have, I mean, you've always had to be at 85 by the start of the new season. So what rule are they going to change that alleviates any issue that James Franklin perceives? That's what I can't figure out. Unless they change that hard cap to 90 or 95, but then you're going to have the issue of cost of attendance, you know, the money that you know, it brings about. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what exactly he's getting at there or how it's going to help, but I'm sure by the time the AFCA coaches convention wraps up on January 14th. We'll have an idea of what he was getting at.
Yeah, we'll see. One other thing for sure, real quick, just the idea here of Tyler Bowens calling plays in the Cotton Bowl. And I don't know if that's any indication of anything, but he would seem to be, I don't know if top inside hire would be, or only inside hire possibility. Right. Maybe it's both. But how do you watch the Cotton Bowl with that in mind? What if the Penn State offense is a genius unit that he pushes all the right buttons? Then what? How does that factor into anything?
I don't think it does. I mean, I think if they wanted to promote Tyler Bowen to offensive coordinator, they would have done it by now. So the fact that they haven't tells you kind of all you need to know. The fact that James Franklin all but said that they're going after, you know, sitting coordinators tells you all you need to know. Of course, some of these guys are probably involved with the college football playoff, like a Joe Brady from LSU would be, of course. Maybe you're talking to some NFL guys and you want to wait until the regular season ends to maybe bring them in for some more conversation. I don't know. I mean, at this point, again, it was striking to me that Penn State didn't lose. They lost one offensive line commit, Devin Willock, to Georgia, which does, I don't think it had anything to do with Ricky Ronnie. But it was just it's still astonishing to me that they got a four-star tight end to commit the same day they lost their offensive coordinator. I think that kind of tells you all you need to know, in the sense that the program's not in any real rush to make that hire. The kids that are signing weren't in any rush to find out who that was going to be. They trust James Franklin, and James Franklin seems like he needs some time to make a decision. So, you know, once he makes that call, we'll find out where things go from there. But, you know, I don't believe that the success or failure of Penn State's offense will change, you know, who ends up being a new hire when all is said and done.
I think it's worth being said as they go through this process that the last two offensive coordinators Penn State has had, their head coaches now. One of them is Ricky Ronnie, who had no coordinator experience, who I don't think you can call his 2 years, like, he gets more blame than he should, obviously, but
yes.
I don't think you can call his 2 years a smashing success either. There are still a lot of questions, namely about, like, what are they trying to accomplish and what's their identity offensively?
Right.
You know, like, I don't think over the past 2 years, we've really gotten an answer to that question. So he didn't want to be a head coach, and here he's a head coach at Old Dominion. I think that's got to count for something. One of the other issues to consider is how much they have in their salary pool to pay an offensive coordinator, and whether that impacts the number of candidates that Penn State can go out and try to get. But in terms of job mobility, I think the offensive coordinator position at Penn State is a pretty good one, and they should be getting a pretty good candidate, maybe somebody who's more proven this time around than Ronnie was last
well,
time.
Well, so yeah, I mean, we've seen James Franklin. His tendency is to find somebody who's established but maybe not at the top of the food chain. It feels like now I think he knows that, you know, the top of the food chain is required. So that's where I think they'll start looking and go from there.
Required top of the food chain. I like that. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to look back on National Signing Day and Penn State's 2020 class so far. Stick around.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football. Flannel. Beards. Tailgating. Oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA. Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon, stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
Looking for the perfect Christmas gift for the Penn State fan in your life? Then you have to go to 409tailgateclub.com and check out the Tailgate Christmas gift box, filled with their famous sauces and rubs and even a Tailgate Club apron. All in a gift box shipped directly to you. And for a 10% discount, be sure to use code KSN on checkout. That's 409tailgateclub.com. And don't forget to use the code KSN on checkout for a 10% discount.